From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Everything starts up front. It's just like on offense. We want our guys to be the heart and soul of who we are. Well, the heart and soul of that defense lies up front. Those guys do a great job of getting off the ball. On top of that, they got a couple of backers who just fly around. And then in the back end, those guys are playing very, very sound. You know, with a hell of a leader in Richard Sherman.
And now, a man who will only be waving red and gold flags next week, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on another wet, gloomy, cold Wednesday. But you know what? It might as well be beach weather for us here in Kansas City. Because we just continue to get closer and closer to the first Super Bowl appearance from your Kansas City Chiefs in 54 years. A lot coming your way today. We will remember the last time the Kansas City Chiefs went to the Super Bowl. A couple of things. One, Stuff the Chumps coming up a little bit later on in the 3 o'clock hour. Jedlines, we'll get you started there.
There you go.
We'll get the, not the headlines. These are better.
Yes.
They're Jedlines.
Yep.
They're actually two letters better on a grading scale.
Agreed.
H-I-J, Jedlines. Coming your way at 3 o'clock with Peter Yates Enoch. He'll be here to stump the chumps and give you great Cajun food from Jazz. Blair Kirkhoff from the Star at 4, talking college athletics. We'll talk KU basketball.
Hello. Because they fought.
We'll get Blair's thoughts on that. Boy, that was a...
Oh, well, wow. You went all...
Bobby Brady.
Your voice isn't usually
Bruce Weber,
like that until
Bobby Brady.
The Friday of a, you know, remote
at the
week.
At the end of the week, yeah. We'll tune in tomorrow.
Or next Friday.
Basketball practice tonight.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
We'll see what Friday, what
time
Friday holds.
Change.
Let's see if I can hit those high notes. La, 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 la. No. No, huh. Not getting there.
Nope.
Not going to do it.
Not going to do it.
If I can stay down here, I'm okay. Yeah. But when I go up there, we're not getting there.
No. Lower and slower.
Kirkhoff will be with us
in
the 4 o'clock hour. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus on a Thursday. You want to know why? The Chiefs haven't lost since we started having Eric Eager on our Pro Football Focus. And we ain't going to be the guy that screws it up. My buddy Kirk is sitting in the front row in my basement of the seats, of the chairs, we're bringing... My mom's going to come,
nice.
And we're having wings. We keep adding food, but we like keep bringing the food we had the last time, too. So, like, stunningly, I'm getting fatter. That, not an upset in and of itself. it's the fact that we refuse to not bring the food we had from the week before. But then we're like, we want a little bit different flavor. So, you know, wings were, like, the main thing a couple weeks ago. Like, let's go barbecue. Let's go get some Joe's. Like, okay, we'll go Joe's. But we still need some wings. So, you know, we just had even more. My buddy Archie's wife.
More food is not a problem.
Makes what she calls sausage balls. Insert your joke there, man. That's your problem. They are delightful.
Well, yeah. They're balls.
It's like a meatball of sausage with like cheese, and then it's like baked, and it gets like kind of crusty.
Oh,
and
bark. Oh, the little bark. Oh, my God.
Oh.
You're killing me.
He's going to Miami. I'll be back here for the Super Bowl. I'm making her, not that I have the ability to.
Right. You've requested.
I'm requesting her make us a batch of those so we have those present on Sunday. Chiefs have not lost a playoff game since those have been served at my house.
Strong.
So somebody might want to tell Christina that's happening. We'll get you some things you need to know, but I mentioned we'd look back to the last time the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, and Jan Stenerud's going to join us here in a little bit.
Can't wait.
Peter Yates Enoch will be in. He covered said Super Bowl,
yes,
so
did.
Pete's coming in early. as well. So we're looking forward to talking about that 69 team and what Jan Stenerud thinks about 50 years later. Did he know it was going to take 50 years? Could he have tipped us off in about like 75 or 6 that like we're in for a long haul here, boys? I don't know. We'll find out. A man who went to Montana.
Montana.
Was it regular Montana, right? Wasn't it? On a skiing scholarship.
Yeah.
Will go on to be the first Hall of Fame kicker in the history of the National Football League. How about that?
He was something else. He was a weapon that no other team in the league had at that point.
Yeah,
I mean, the accuracy, the distance. There was no one that kicked like Jan Stenerud.
And I am interested to see what he thinks about Harrison Butker, because I think the Chiefs have a guy that's kind of a similar weapon right now.
Montana State.
Damn.
Bobcats.
Montana State. Well, I was in the right state.
Yep.
Don't ask me to name a town in Montana.
Helena.
That's it. We all got the capital.
Billings.
No more.
Butte.
Missoula.
Springfield. Screw all of you guys.
Damn it.
Every state's got a Springfield.
That's true. Every town has a Main Street. Every state has a Springfield.
That's right. By the way, I mentioned Eric Eager, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear from Dave Tobe at the podium today. This is something I think is interesting. 2 weeks of preparation,
mm-hmm.
right? We know Andy Reid, great with the bye week, but they've got a lot of extra media, so it's not like a full bye week because they're in working this week, because next week they're going to have a lot of their time taken up by the media obligations that all the teams have. And it's not just when they're available to the general media. It's what they got to do for the TV networks, what they got to do for the NFL. There's a lot of stuff going on. I asked Dave Tobe about that. He's been through the Super Bowl with the Bears. I asked Tobe if having an additional week would benefit his unit, the special teams, maybe more than others.
I don't know if it benefits me any more than anybody else, but it definitely benefits us because you can work on little things. You have extra days to work on special returns or special situations. A lot of times you talk about them in meeting, but you don't get to practice it. Now we get to practice it because we have a little bit more time. So it's always good to have 2 weeks.
Listen, I have total confidence in Dave Tobe as a special teams coordinator. The reality is just the results haven't been what you want them to be.
Yeah.
But is this not the greatest situation you could ever be in if you're him? He's a Hall of Fame special teams coach. They don't put those guys in. They probably should, right, have a wing for Hall of Fame assistants.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they had a head coaching stint that wasn't very good for 3 or 4 years, but just consistently. Like Wade Phillips, to me, has been a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he DC'd the Broncos, immediately turned them around. He DC'd the Rams, mm-hmm. turned them around, got them into the Super Bowl. You know, that's a Hall of Fame defensive yeah. coordinator. He's not going to get in.
There's a handful of those guys through history that,
yeah.
that you know, Bill Arnsparger. They're guys like that, but Wade Phillips definitely applies.
And yeah.
If there is one for special teams.
He's it.
He's certainly.
He's the grandfather. He is the man when it comes to that. But, you know, he's got a chance to erase all of that, any frustrations. Mm-hmm. They keep winning, right? And so now if he has a big day and they get, a punt return down to the 10 and a kickoff return for a touchdown, the history will write that Dave Tobe's special teams were yet again dominant in 2019. So I think it's interesting. And he said, we got more time to practice some things. And I don't know what all has gone on. They had a lot of injuries early on. Teams always have injuries. I don't know how much, maybe, after the season, he's not going to say it during the season. Maybe after the season, he's going to be like, listen, not to make excuses, but, or maybe 5 years down the road when it couldn't even begin to be, you know, taken as an excuse, he'll be standing at a podium going, well, you know, I remember in 19 where we just had injuries that it was the biggest challenge of my career. Like we had guys out of place all over the place. We just seemed to keep getting guys hurt in practice. So we couldn't practice all week. I don't know. I could, you know. Chris Jones going down, you know, and it's not even that it's Chris Jones. It's that like you bump up Colin Saunders. And so now he's not on whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is. Maybe they just had an off year, but I do think that that's interesting. But I thought this one was kind of telling. I asked Dave Tobe about the firepower of the Chiefs offense, that because you've got such a great offense, and I think he's got a little Andy Reid in him. See if you hear that as well. In the sense that he's trying to figure out where I'm going with it, that I'm trying to catch him. Like trying to get him in
it's
a negative
question.
And it's not. I don't generally ask loaded questions. That's not really what I'm looking to do. But I asked him if the firepower the Chiefs have on offense, you know, affects whether or not it means, you know, his aggressiveness. Does he go and be more aggressive because he knows the offense can make up for mistakes? Or does he become more conservative because they don't need him to catch a touchdown? What does it do having that kind of firepower on offense?
I wish I could have took what we did last week back. You know, we were up three scores, and I got greedy and I put the return team out there because I wanted to get another return. I should have been safer, you know, when they ran the fake and put eight guys in the box. That was on me. You know, so that's a prime example of me trying to do too much with the guys we got. So I learned a lesson on that. You know, if we're up three scores, you know, you play it safe. If the team's going to punt when you're up three scores, something's fishy.
But it worked, right? So, I mean,
it worked for them, but, for us, it didn't work, you know?
You know, I was trying to say, but whatever your plan was, like,
yeah.
Right? So he was being aggressive in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It worked from the standpoint that you won. So to me, that's kind of where I was going with it. And maybe he did. Yeah. I wasn't thinking.
You had a general question and he answered immediately with a specific.
Well, I think he heard it as, oh, you're saying I got too aggressive because I went for a return, which is what he has clearly concluded.
Mm-hmm.
He said it.
Yeah.
He was honest and open and said, you know, I was, you know, I learned a lesson. And I listen, that's where I've seen teams. I think the biggest example of this is the Raiders Bucks in 2002. Overthinking what you're doing. Do what you do. Fast break basketball teams can't get to the championship game and say we're going to play a Princeton offense. Like, you can't do it. And so that's what I was trying to get to. Was there a philosophical approach? Maybe he doesn't want to tip a card. Maybe he's afraid if he says, we got to be aggressive. And maybe that's their plan. They've got an onside kick. They're coming hell or high water on punt block. You know, I don't know. And he's just worried about tipping off the 49ers. But I thought it was interesting that I asked him a generalities question. Mm-hmm. At a time that I think he was aggressive. Setting up the return in that situation, he's like, okay, you're going to be dumb enough to punt this away. We're going for the kill shot. We're going to end it right now. We're going to get a return. We're either going to get a touchdown or we're going to get a good return here, set up our offense, and we're going to go for the kill shot. And they ran the fake, and they got him, and it didn't matter. You know, it mattered in the final score,
yeah.
But it didn't matter who won or lost. The Chiefs were never really in doubt. Oh, yes, he received grief and criticism, and rightfully so from a standpoint of you're in the get-it-right business. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you that I'm not so sure that wasn't the perfect play. Just congratulations. Mike Vrabel can coach too. He saw the return team come out for the Chiefs. Their coaches in the box saw it and said, listen, they're going for a return. Then let's run the fake. You know, he was going to punt it away, but when the Chiefs got greedy, which would be their view, he said, let's steal it. See if we can steal a possession here. Let's go. Let's run the fake. Because they're set for it. Because they're going to be bailing out on the return, and we can get this first down. Well, I mean, I can't tell you that that's the worst. I can just tell you that the Titans caught him. Andy Reid will come to the podium and say, yeah, they got us there. You know, they got us there. It happens. I do know this. I think special teams are going to be critical in this game. They always are in a one-off game. They'll be critical from a standpoint that either neither team gets an edge, so you didn't blow it. They'll be critical because you can steal a possession. You can steal a score. But they're going to be big. And even with, like I said, an off year for Dave Tobe, I feel great that Dave Tobe is going to coach the special teams for the Chiefs in this Super Bowl. And I think he gives them an outstanding shot. I feel really good that Dustin Colquitt is the punter because I think if what you need is a guy to boom you out of fourth down from your own 10, you're already losing. Like, that can't be it. Like, Dustin Colquitt, no punter, is going to flip the field 80 yards every time. I'd rather have Dustin Colquitt, who's going to pin him down inside the 10 consistently, inside the 20 almost always. With the Chiefs' offensive ability to consistently move the ball, there should be a lot of punting where it's directional. You heard Dave Tobe talk about that today as well. They have changed Dustin Colquitt from being a guy that just blasted it out of there to a guy that's more directional. Now, part of that was necessity. They don't suck horrifically on offense the way they did when Andy Reid and Dave Tobe came to town. He was always booming it out of his end zone. Good Lord, just kick it as far as you can.
We'll hope for a turnover.
But I like the fact that Dustin Colquitt's there to try to pin San Francisco down if they have to play field position. And I like the fact that you've got a guy in Harrison Butker that, you know, maybe this game was just too cold, or maybe that was the game plan against the Titans. They wanted him to return it. But seemingly in warm weather, if you don't want to face a return, you just tell Butker to kick it out of the back of the end zone. And likewise, if you're stealing that possession, and what you get is a shot at a 58-yarder before the half, or even you want to take a shot at 65, just knowing it's a long shot, you got a guy that can do that. I think the special teams, you know, all their mistakes have led to this point, and they have a chance to erase them all.
There's been one kickoff return touchdown to open a Super Bowl.
Fulton Walker? No, that was a half.
Devin Hester,
his Bears.
It was Dave Tobe.
Dave Tobe's Bears.
I mean,
now
he
yeah.
had a borderline Hall of Fame guy doing it, but there's been a lot of good returners. Only one's done it in the Super Bowl to start the game, so you know, he's got proof of purchase.
If they don't defer.
Yeah, it's the thing. If the Chiefs win the toss, he's not going to get that opportunity. Interesting to see what happens if the 49ers get to win the toss, what they do. I haven't really looked at their patterns this year.
If I were the 49ers, I'd do whatever I normally do.
Yeah.
But
look and see when they toss what they've done this year.
I do think that the Chiefs find themselves in a really good spot from the special team standpoint, in the sense that I think this is a motivated special teams that's had 2 weeks where they didn't play very well. I mean, overall, you give up the fake punt, it's not a good day. Now, Andy Reid was defensive when I asked him about the Texans game. Well, we got them back. You did. But you need to be sharp across the board. And I think, you know, what unit would be more sharp than one that has not had their best days but finds himself fortunate enough to move along. All right, one other note. Do we have Florio? We had that, I know.
It is in the cool. I'm sorry, I didn't put that. We do have that.
I want to play this just because we're going to get a question about it here real quick from Northland Joe. Mike Florio continues to be a guy that – you know, he's the one that said that if Tyreek Hill ever plays again, he'll quit covering the National Football League. So he is someone that, you know, maybe not to the extent of some others in the media, but has drawn the ire of many a Chiefs fan. And, you know, I can tell you a lot of people in the NFL, he frustrates a lot of people in the NFL. And like I said, during the course of the Tyreek Hill saga, if you will, investigation, everything, said that if Tyreek Hill ever plays in the NFL again, he will quit covering football. There's been a lot of Chiefs fans that have fired out at him. Of course, he's the, I don't know what his title is, but Pro Football Talk is where he works, and I think he started the whole website and got it going. Here are his comments about how the 49ers should play defense against Patrick Mahomes earlier.
You know what? At a certain level, I think that, and I want to be careful here because I'm not suggesting that they try to knock him out of the game. That's not what I'm saying. But at a certain point, you trade the risk of 15 yards if you can send a message. And football is still a physical, violent game. If you can hit him, even if it's close to the sideline, even if he's maybe started into his slide, when the championship is riding on it, I think it's a different analysis. And, yeah, we may give up 15 yards or half the distance to the goal line. I mean, that's the thing, Peter. If somebody had blown up Patrick Mahomes inside the 5, okay, it goes from the 4 to the 2. Right. Big deal. So, again, I'm not saying that that should be part of the deliberate effort, but the Super Bowl is riding on it. And if this guy's going to think that he can just run through the defense without any physical consequence, they need to dispel him of that notion the first time he tries.
That's the, like, I'm not saying.
But I'm saying.
But I'm saying.
I'm not saying that's what they should do. I'm just saying it's what I do.
All right. In a championship game, John Elway never ran until against the Packers. He ran and he dove for it. I think Patrick Mahomes, regular season, probably steps out of bounds at the 5 instead of cutting it back in and going for the end zone, right? I think we've seen him protect himself, but he went for the end zone because it was the AFC Championship game last week. Is this reality of the NFL? Whether we like what we're hearing or not, the fact that it's Mike Florio who's frustrated a lot of football fans and a lot of Chiefs fans, is this something that the Kansas City Chiefs need to be aware of? And this is the reality. The 49ers are going to try to send a message. And, in fact, the Chiefs are going to try to send a message to Jimmy Garoppolo if he gets out there. And yeah. They're going to be willing to perhaps take a personal foul penalty. Nobody has a chance to calculate. He's inside the five. It's only half the distance to the goal. So I'm going to go ahead and hit him as he's going out of bounds, as opposed to he's at the 50. You either are or are not telling your team anywhere near being in bounds, blow him up. You can't say only inside the five. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Is that reality of what this game is? And from that standpoint, we need to get over hearing that comment.
I mean, Al Davis, it's one of the more famous quotes years back. Other teams' quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. And, I mean, that's been, you know, celebrated as a great – now, sacking a guy in the pocket or whatever he's referring to is maybe different than hit a guy out of bounds.
Sacking is what he was referring to.
But
and they have – the game has changed, and they now no longer allow that.
Yeah.
And Al Davis died long before those rules came to fruition.
Yeah, so –
The forward pass is for wimps was said by many people way back in the day. It doesn't still hold up.
No. Doesn't this seem a little bit like it's the unwritten rules thing? Like we were just talking about with the whole basketball that happened.
Right.
It's one of those things where, you know, it's you want to play the game a certain way. And, yeah, you want to be a good sport and play by the rules. But when it's a championship game, yeah, you want to hit a guy. And, yeah, if he gets injured, well, those are happened. It happened. Oh, well.
Full disclosure, I mentioned the part about Tyreek Hill. Mike Florio once a long time ago misquoted me and got me into the principal's office in front of a general manager.
Yes.
Having to explain why I didn't say what I didn't say, in reality what it was. And I did get a retraction ultimately from him. But so I got no love for Mike Florio. Don't take this. But I do think we have to be careful about being overly sensitive about everything we hear. I think there is a mindset there that that's reality. But you know what? Patrick Mahomes is a 225-pound big boy who knows the position he plays and knows his importance. And I don't think we all necessarily got to hold his hand. I know Northland Joe wanted to talk about this. Let's get him in here before Jan Stenerud joins us. Joe, you're in the program. What's up, buddy?
Thanks for taking my call, Saran.
You bet.
Well, I think there's a difference between playing hard and aggressive. You get a quarterback that's in the pocket, you knock him down, rough him up a little bit, not intentionally trying to hurt him. And what Florio is saying is try to hurt him and take him out of the game. And I don't think that's where we are. I don't think that's where we should be. And I'm hopeful that if the referees see something like that, I mean, what do they do? Like Florio said, 15-yard penalty or half the distance, is that enough? Should that player be ejected automatically from the game?
No, not if it's borderline. Like you said, Joe, no, he's not going to be. And that's where I say I'm conditioning Chiefs fans to not be overly protective. By the way, because Mike Florio said it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because Peter King sat there like a bump and went, yeah, the whole time doesn't mean it's going to happen. I definitely think Mike Florio's rooting for the 49ers. And I think you're hearing a guy, and I didn't hear the whole segment. I think you're hearing a guy present the case, and here's the blueprint for beating him. I also think if that's your talking point about how the 49ers win, you probably think the Chiefs are going to win. And you're trying to figure out how to reverse engineer a victory that you don't think is coming.
Because you stepped outside the normal thought process of offense and defense. And I'll tell you what they got to do. They got to do this. Well, that says you've exhausted the norms. And your team's coming out on the wrong end of it.
Now, stay tuned to hear if Jason LaConfora calls in a bombing strike on the Chiefs huddle before it's all said and done. Another noted Kansas City hater. And I would call Mike Florio a Kansas City hater based upon how he's covered things since he made a grandiose ass of himself by saying he would quit covering the NFL if Tyreek Hill played again. You can see what his words mean. He's still covering the league. And Tyreek Hill is still playing. We'll take a break. Jan Stenerud going to join us. Peter Yates, Enoch coming up here in the program.
Your Super Bowl station.
This game is over, and so is the 50-year drought between Super Bowls.
Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Stenerud kicks 27 out of 35 this year. This will be for about 48. Dennerud booms it there, and it's good.
And after being vanquished by Green Bay in 1967, the Chiefs are the champions of pro football.
Welcome back here in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've talked about it 50 years. The Chiefs fans have waited for the Kansas City Chiefs to be back in the game. I welcome to the festivities a couple of guys that were part of that game. One, Hall of Famer Jan Stenerud joins us here in the program. Jan, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, sir. How about you?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you. And, of course, our buddy Peter Yatsenyuk, who joins us every Thursday in the program, who covered the Kansas City Chiefs at that time. Pete, how are you, my friend?
Doing fine. Nice to be in the presence of one of the all-time greats here.
It is.
Old-time or all-time?
All-time. All-time.
Of course, you know who taught him how to kick? Fletcher Smith.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about
wait
him.
A second. Yeah,
we're going to talk
second.
About him in a second here.
Yeah. What does it mean to you, though, having played in the game to see this franchise back in the Super Bowl?
Well, it's extremely exciting. We had no idea it was going to be this long, and you never think about it. When you play football, it's the next game that counts. And nobody knew it was going to be 50 years, obviously. But I've been going down to the Super Bowl for the last several years because of different functions that you get invited to as a Hall of Famer, frankly. And this year I was going. And the reason I'm going, because of the 100-year team. And I knew about that, in, I think it was late October. And I was hoping, of course, that this would be the year for the Chiefs to get in. And so it worked out. So I was pretty darn excited last weekend when this happened, and really looking forward to it. And I feel so great for the, you know, for the Hunt family, of course, and the fans in Kansas City and the organization. So I usually don't get too excited about things, but I'm excited about this.
Yeah. Did you at that time realize how big it is, and how much bigger is it now as the game has grown, the Super Bowl has grown?
It is a lot bigger, and I didn't really go, not at the time. By that time, there was Super Bowl IV, and I remember the early ones very clearly. Of course, I actually signed with the Chiefs 3 weeks before Super Bowl I. I was the future draft choice. I only kicked the year at Montana State, and which is in Bozeman, Montana, by the way.
Yeah. And you noticed I don't know Montana towns. Thank you.
A lot of people don't, but it's a wonderful state, I tell you that. So the early days, it was, 35-10. And then it was 33-14. The Raiders got beaten by them, and then Super Bowl III and then IV. So I remember those days, you know, very clearly. But even by Super Bowl IV, I think that was the first time it was actually called the Super Bowl way in advance.
Right.
But even then, we had press. I started going down there in about 1990 again. Now they had press days, you know. And in those days, between practices, we had actually the press coming up to the hotel rooms if they wanted to talk to you. And I think there were several hundred press people then. Even by that time, it was by Super Bowl IV. It was the biggest sporting event in America. There was no question about that. I remember reading about 70 million people watching it on television. Well, there were 220 people in America. Now it's 325 or whatever. And 100 people, the percentage watching in this country is similar to that. So it was a big deal, but has it grown? You bet. The people, corporate America has taken over. It's when you go to the game, it's a strange atmosphere. There's no home team. There's no visiting team. And that was struck me the most in Super Bowl IV. You know, when we score, it was good noise, but it seemed like it was in New Orleans. It was all of New Orleans was new in the league. It was still an NFL or NFC town.
Right.
So they probably have a little bit more fans than we did. But it didn't matter towards the end of the game at all.
I think the thing that has maybe not, that people today would be surprised to know is how much you guys were still the underdog. You know, I think today people look back, if you're a younger person and maybe, you know, you started watching the Super Bowl, you can remember the first Super Bowl 75. You know, when I say younger, that's 40-something, right? That's 76, 77. That's the first one that I remember. What I didn't know till later, really until I met Pete, and he was telling me, and now since then I've read books about it, is you guys were still massive underdogs.
Well, the year before.
It was considered a fluke by a lot of people.
The year before, Baltimore was 18-point favorite to beat the Jets. And, of course, Joe steps out of a restaurant, and somebody's asking, hey, Joe, are you going to win the game tomorrow? Or Sunday or whatever. And they said, well, yes, we are, I guarantee you.
Right.
And so that was And now that has, you know, grown into a legendary answer, obviously. Well, they beat him, and they beat him 16-7. I mean, the Jets had a great defense.
Yeah.
And Joe, they didn't throw the ball all that much in that game. And so the next year, the Vikings, they do have a good team. They win 12 games in a row, I believe. But we had a heck of a team. And, you know, they didn't score upon more than 6 points, the Jets, in the first playoff game. And the Jets had, you know, Super Bowl defending champions. We go to Oakland, who had beaten us twice that year, and Oakland had a great offensive team. They scored 7. So then we saw that we were 13-14 points underdogs. I know our defensive guy says, hey, wait a minute. They're not going to get 13 points on us.
Did you feel pressure? Having lost in Super Bowl I, a game that's much closer than people may realize.
Close at halftime.
Yeah, very, very much 14. So.
I was not in that game. I had, but I.
Why don't you tell us about that, Jan, if you could? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you were, for the younger people out here, you were the third kicker drafted in 1966.
I do not know that. I know that Pete Gogolak.
Charlie Gogolak.
Because when I got into football at Montana State, I didn't really like football that much because I didn't understand it. People played for 4 or 5 seconds, stood around for 30 seconds. Yeah. At Montana State, they stood around. That looked like they did the same thing 30 seconds later. So I like basketball more. But having a soccer background and going on the field and kicking one day my junior year with a kicker down there, after 3 or 4 attempts with the toe, he asked me, can you kick with the side of your foot? And I asked him, is it legal to kick with the side of your foot like you take a corner kick in soccer, because that's my summer sport in Norway? And I never forget his answer. Yes, you can, because the guy for the Buffalo Bills, his name is Pete Gogolak.
Right, right.
Now, I never saw other soccer-style kickers for 3 or 4 years. They were in the league for 2 or 3 years because there was no NFL network. There was no ESPN.
Right.
Only a couple of games on NBC and CBS. So the style that I came up with, I had no idea what the other Gogolak was, what their steps they were taking. I just knew I had to kick an extra point in about 1.3 seconds from the time you snapped the ball.
Were you injured that year in 66? Because,
no, because
really, you shouldn't have been beat out by...
No, so what happened was my coach at Montana State, Jim Sweeney, and the reason they discovered me, I kicked a 59-yard field goal, which broke the pro record by 3 yards and the college record by 5.
Right,
and that's why Bobby Bethard and Tommy O'Boyle, who was the Chiefs head talent
scout,
and they all came out and watched me. So my coach in college, Jim Sweeney, later coached for Fresno State for many years, he convinced me to go to college one more full quarter, the quarter system, so I could hopefully get drafted by the NFL. And, of course, he probably wanted me on the team too, perhaps.
But right.
Then the next year, I stayed in school one more full quarter. We had a good year, and I set a record for most kicks scored by a kicker.
Right.
And then the NFL... It's a long answer. We had the special draft of about 30 of us that had been drafted as AFL future draft choices, the redshirt draft, the year before. And when the Atlanta had that draft, I was the first one out of those 30 to be picked. And I was picked by the Atlanta Falcons. So it was Atlanta against Kansas City. But when I met Bobby Bethard and I talked about Tom Pratt and Tommy O'Boyle and Hank Stram and Lamar Hunt, Atlanta didn't have much chance. I wanted to go. I liked the people. We knew that that they talked about our league was not on par with the NFL. So, but actually, 67 was my rookie year.
Did you think a 22nd round draft choice would make it to the Hall of Fame? And that was you?
Well, I was I was in a special draft.
Yeah.
I was a third round draft choice.
Yeah, okay.
I have the telegram. The reason, going to the draft a little bit, the draft is like it is today. It's a big deal. I got a telegram addressed, my name addressed to Cairo, Montana State University. Congratulations on being drafted in the third round of the AFL redshirt draft, signed Jack Stedman. And I said, what the heck does this mean?
Did you, when you got to Super Bowl IV, and you just mentioned the people that were there and Coach Stram, now he'd won the AFL championship, right? So it wasn't like Andy Reid enters this game having not won a Super Bowl. But we've heard all the coaches and all the players talk about how much they want to win for Coach Reid, which to me seems like there's a little bit of pressure on him. Did you feel... having not gotten it done the first time, that there was pressure on you guys?
No, I think the only thing that we thought about was most important, of course, winning a Super Bowl is the biggest deal. But we wanted to win it for the league. It was the AFL, but Hank had won all the time. They won 3 AFL championships.
Yep.
Who was your commissioner then?
The commissioner was Pete Rozelle.
Okay.
Of course, before that.
Al Davis.
Al Davis for a while, but Pete Rozelle by then. And of course, the first one was the guy, the congressman from North Dakota.
Right, Joe Foss. Joe Foss,
yeah,
that's right.
The AFL. Yeah. But we want to win it for the league and ourselves. It wasn't so much that, because we were winning a lot. So it wasn't,
right.
It was for the league and the Kansas City fans and ourselves. Did you, of course, Hank.
And were you, you know, you mentioned your defense seeing the spread and where they were, what the number was and being such a decided underdog. Did that serve as motivation for everybody?
You know, I think when you play the Super Bowl, you don't need a heck of a lot of motivation. It's the most important thing you're ever going to be involved with. For the defensive guys, it might have been. But I think most of us, all we thought about was to be able to do your very best. Don't get hooked up or caught up in all the ways. It's a lot worse now than it was then, but still. People want tickets. Friends and relatives want to talk to you. They want and interviews and all kinds of stuff. And Hank, by the way, he had a fine. It was in New Orleans. If we were seen in the French quarters during the week, the fine was $5,000.
That was one-third of your money right there, if you won.
Needless to say, nobody got caught down in New Orleans or whatever. But it was for ourselves to do that.
Yeah. Distractions are big, like you said.
We talked about that.
How about the Lynn Dawson distraction?
Now, as far as the team is concerned, that was a big story because of the media every year, and I got to many, you know, way after that. We have all the media in the town. There's going to be some things that people are going to hang on to. So we were told that on the NBC Nightly News with Huntley Brinkley report, there's going to be a story that Lenny had at some association with an owner gambler from Detroit named Donald Dawson. And Lenny, we had a quick meeting, and Lenny said he just talked to me on the phone once or twice. He called me when my dad died during the season, and there's nothing to this. And we knew, we had known Lenny for years, and somebody in the team stood up and used a few words you can't repeat on the radio or television and said, "Lenny, we love you. We know you're good. We know you're not illegal. The hell with that." And that was over with. I was in the media for days. For us, we never thought about it another second. Now, for Lenny, it was harder because there was a lot of stuff on the news here. And I think he took his kids out of school.
Right.
Week. But for us, that meeting lasted a few seconds. We watched the thing because Jim Schaaf was the PR director.
Sure.
And Hank Stram and Lamar, maybe even they wrote some kind of a news release or whatever. But as far as we're concerned, never bothered us a second because we didn't believe it for a second.
Right.
There was no way. Right. We were just trying to be prepared and do the very best we can
I've been with Lynn at the horse track, and he's not a good bettor. So, I mean, seriously, he'd had nothing to do with that. I know that.
No, we knew that.
Hear the tapping of Jan is wearing two rings. One is his wedding ring. The one you hear, though, is the
heavy
Super
one.
Bowl IV ring.
Well, I tell you what, this is actually... a new Hall of Fame ring.
Oh, is it really?
The one I got in 91 was a lot smaller.
Okay.
And about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was at an appearance this morning, but people like to see the ring.
Sure.
So I put on this thing instead of the Super Bowl ring because I...
Tough choice.
I want to wait till these other guys get theirs.
They gave 100 of those. Probably more.
No, this is to all the new people I get in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, not the 100 team, just the Hall of Fame.
No, that's nothing to do with the 100-year team. So now the people that got in the rings years ago, we all got them too.
Very nice. We will take a break. We'll come back more with Jan Stenerud, kicker for that 1969 championship team. Hall of Famer Jan Stenerud is with us here in the program.
Your Super Bowl station.
Kansas City is the AFC champion. They are headed to Miami for Super Bowl 54.
Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking some Chiefs football with Jan Stenerud, kicker for the Super Bowl champions, Super Bowl IV Hall of Famer Jan Stenerud, who played with a lot of Hall of Famers. It's an amazingly decorated team. Did you guys know how good you were? Willie Lanier, Buck Buchanan, Bobby Bell, Len Dawson. Pete and I have talked about it. Yeah. Emmett Thomas in there.
One notably
Johnny Robinson
right now. Yeah.
Johnny Robinson.
I don't think we thought about in that turn. We knew we had great players. Then when the Pro Bowl was picked, there were a couple of years of 8 or 9 or 10 of us.
Right.
You had 11.
Matter of fact,
we
didn't go after Super Bowl IV. We didn't come back to the parade. 7 or 8 of us went to the AFL All-Star game.
Right.
So we knew we had a lot of star players. But that then Manny was going to be end up in the Hall of Fame, and then still you know, a lot of teams with a lot of Hall of Fame players, or at least they think they should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, we have a couple of guys. The first one that comes to mind to me is Ed Buddy.
Yeah,
he was a great, great guard. I mean, a great guard. And I remember one game in 1970 against the Raiders. I think they had three pass attempts and completing two. And Ed Buddy was the offensive player of the week in the AFL. And of course, then you got a talent like an Otis Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you had a lot of great. How about I can go on with all of the people we had. EJ Hollum started Super Bowl I as an outside linebacker.
Yeah.
Started Super Bowl IV as a center. I don't think anybody else has done that, starting in two different Super
Bowls. No, nobody ever has.
And I remember the offensive line. Of course, Arbanez was a great, great tight end. I didn't throw much to him, but he was a phenomenal tight end. And then you had David Hill, and you had Mo Mormon, you had EJ, and you had Ed Buddy, and Jim Tyree was in all league almost every year.
Dave Hill.
And you had Frank Pitts and, of course, Otis. And, running back for no slouch, then Mike Garrett, Heisman Trophy winner.
That's right.
And we had Wendell
Frank
Hayes
Pitts set
and
up
Tank
three-year
Holmes.
Field goals that day, didn't he?
They ran in around three reverses.
Yeah.
And Lenny Dawson could throw the football.
Yeah.
And Gerald Wilson, I remember in pregame warm-up, I see a lot later, the coaches for the Vikings that watched the pregame warm-up. And when they saw, and of course, you know that the kickers came out early before anybody else on both teams. And of course, we didn't have a snapper. So Lenny came out and EJ was snapping or whatever, and Lenny to hold. But I remember Jerry Burns and some of those coaches, they said they were concerned about the kickers for the Chiefs because they'd never seen anybody punt the ball as high and far as Gerald Wilson in the NFC. And they hadn't seen anybody probably kick the football as far as I could in the NFC before or in the NFL. So we had a team.
Did you know that a guy that kicked for the Vikings was going to be an inventor of the Nerf ball?
I did see that. You know, unfortunately, I saw that when Fred Cox died. He died about a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. He was a nice man.
Was he a good guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a chiropractor up in Minneapolis.
No, Sarim was probably thinking this too. I'm sorry, Sarim, about the time in between games. Did you favor 2 weeks or one?
Well, for me, I think most of the guys are favored too because I get hurt. I don't get hurt, to speak of.
Right.
But I do remember that particular year. There's a couple of times later. There's only been 1 week between the championship game and the Super Bowl. And, of course, the story has been told many times that when we played the Raiders out there, when we won 17-7, and then when the bus waiting to go back to the airport, we see the Oakland Raiders coming out carrying their gear. They're packed. That packed the gear to go to New Orleans, straight from the stadium in Oakland, down to New Orleans without even going home first. So we got a little chuckle out of watching them putting the suitcase in the wife's car and drive home while we were flying back to Kansas City, then headed out right down to New Orleans. But it might have been an advantage for us because we had our offense was probably how much did I know about the X's and O's on the football team, although Hank made me sit in the offensive meetings quite a bit, but Our offense was probably more difficult to defend.
Oh, yes.
Defend to prepare for.
Hank Stram's offense was the precursor to Bill Walsh's offense.
The Wild West, the variety show.
Yeah.
Over there. We had a lot of stuff. So.
You put the first 9 points on the board. You know, you got it out to 9-0.
Yeah. I've been getting some credit for that. I think the most important thing is that my first kickoffs went out of the park.
Right.
Because for that, in those days, you could kick field goals, the goalposts from the goal line.
Right.
So I know afterward, Carl Eller and some of those guys would say, well, once they got to the 50, we were in trouble. And also, if you missed from a long, long kick, the ball went to the 20-yard line.
Yes.
So that was what was important. But I remember we got to 9 to right before the half, before the 65-toss power trap.
Right.
I was standing on the side thinking, we got to score a touchdown. Because if you get 12, this still is too close to be comfortable. And when that popped wide open, as Hank would say on the television,
that's right.
It was 16, and then we felt a lot better. But what happened was, now they, the halftime, everything is so precisely. I bet the halftime lasted over half an hour that day. I've been told later it was 33 minutes. And we're leading 16-0, and the other team is heavy favorites. And we can't wait to get out and get this going again. So the momentum is kind of stopped. And then they scored. And then, of course, then they passed Otis, and we were in pretty good shape. So it was different because, you couldn't relax still till the game. I remember one guy on the sideline was I had a warm-up jacket on. They kept bugging me about my warm-up jacket after the game, and I thought, but leave me alone. But I thought, it's probably fairly important. His guest, Hank, or on the sideline. But it turned out to be Pat O'Brien, who had been the active for one for the Gipper or Knut Rockne or whatever. And finally, with about a few seconds to go, I gave him my coat. But that's when I found out who he was.
That's impressive. We're talking to Jan Stenerud here in the program. The parade. What was the parade like? You know, it's a people.
Well, we didn't know. I watched it from Houston because, like I said, several of us flew to Houston for the AFL All-Star game. And Mike Livingston was picked at the Pro Bowl because, remember, Mike came in. Nobody, I didn't talk much about Mike.
Did anybody apologize that you guys didn't get to go be a part of that? And
there was no such a. There was, I guess I read someplace later that Lanier, Willie, had talked to Jack Stedman about this. That, God darn it, you should have that. You know, we should have had it some different time. We could have come back with a team and flying back on Tuesday.
Right.
I know how much that would cost to fly down.
It was too deep downtown.
And it was 100,000 people plus. But eight or nine of us were watching it on television from Houston.
And what's that experience like when you're watching that?
Well, we wish we were there.
Sure.
So even I guess looking back, I never thought about it because that's the way it was. We didn't criticize anybody for that.
So even at Super Bowl,
they could have flown us back and then flown up.
Yeah. Even at Super Bowl IV, guys didn't want to be there.
They didn't want to be there.
I mean, we've seen where guys beg out of the game.
Oh, I see.
You wanted to be there for a parade. Now they don't even make the championship teams play, right? They've moved the Pro Bowl up. It'll be this weekend. Yeah. So the Chiefs and Niners players won't be there.
Well, they didn't want to be there because we wanted to be in the parade.
Sure, of course.
But you always want to be in the All-Star game because that's the number of Pro Bowls. Like, that's you measured quite a bit by that.
Right.
You know, how many Pro Bowls you are picked to. Although, in a lot of other cases, like Ed Buddy and Bobby or even myself or Lenny, they list the Pro Bowl, but the Pro Bowl started in 1970. A lot of us had All-Star games before that, which was our Pro Bowl. Right.
Yes.
So who was the biggest character on your team? I mean, we look at characters and leaders.
Mine had to be E.J. Hallam.
E.J., yeah.
He took
Cheryl Hedrick's spot.
Yeah, Hedrick was a teammate for 1 year.
Yeah.
But E.J. would not leave me alone. We have eight weeks up we had seven games that year because we played the exhibition games, because we played the college All-Star game as well, and six exhibition games.
That's right. That's
mostly against NFL teams that we wanted to beat in the worst way.
Right.
So we're up in camp there for 8-9 weeks, and as a rookie, you're asked to stand up in your chair and stand in a certain position and grab certain parts of your body. That's the way they ask you to do it, and sing your school song. And I was shy, I was young, and I got embarrassed, and tried to avoid EJ at all costs. But because we had about an hour gap to eat. He caught me every goddamn meal. I'm up on that chair. So after a couple of weeks, Hank says, well, he does that because he likes you. Well, I said, well, Coach, I don't get that impression. But anyway, he was a character. We had a lot of character. I mean, we had so many. And they are today, too, I'm sure. These tough, big football players. They're tough characters. They're wild people.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned today. I've talked with a number of kickers. And they've told me about how even today, how much easier it is to be effective in the NFL versus even college, whether it's more practice time, better fields. How much easier do you think it is to be a kicker today than when you were playing?
Well, I went through the evolution. I don't want to go into all that, but it sounds like I'm alibying for my numbers, which I don't need
to
be.
No, your numbers were phenomenal. You're Hall of Famer.
Never heard a guy have to apologize for being a Hall of Famer.
But because with my contemporaries, I was doing pretty well. But anyway, keep in mind, we didn't have – Lenny was the holder.
Right.
And EJ was the snap again. Then Bobby took over afterwards. So on Friday afternoon, I said, Lenny, something early, my first couple of years, we didn't practice on Saturday. We were traveling, then go to the game and maybe a little bit kicking special teams. But Lenny, I haven't kicked a field goal all week with the center and the holder. And he said, well, EJ is tired, you know, maybe tomorrow or whatever. So we didn't get many during the week after training camp. And then we didn't have a warm-up net on the sideline.
Right.
So it was a cold day and nothing you can do, and you couldn't get hold of your snapper and your holder to kick on the sideline. They were busy playing. So the practice was a lot less, but that was the same for everybody. I remember Blanda told me one time on a Friday afternoon, he kicked five kicks from the 37 yards, and if he made all five, that was it. You know? That's true. So, but then the practice, in the late 70s, we start getting special teams coaches. So when I get up to Green Bay and start making some bigger numbers, now at least a special teams coach, got maybe a backup center, And if they start breaking in, the punter as holders,
right,
they had good hands.
Right.
So I've underthrown the football to them many times, and during the practice, they can. So we started to get more and more practice time. And now they also have a snapper, of course. And the football is more suited for kicking these days.
Right.
We had the old. But here again, it was the same. And I just say one thing.
Yeah.
The kickers today, they are really good.
They are impressive.
Early in my career, I was kicking about. Although we got a lot of kicks blocked too, because we kick 7 yards deep instead of eight. And the fields weren't very good. But anyway, I think early in my career, the league average was about 50%.
Yeah.
And now, if you don't kick well over 80, you're not going to be in the league.
No.
Next kicker in the Hall of Fame, who is it?
Well, I was asked many times when I had been in for a few years, and I predicted Morten Andersen, and then, of course, Adam Vinatieri.
Right. Yeah, there we go.
And now, I tell you what, the people that feel, most people ask the guy in Baltimore might be the best.
Justin Tucker.
I tell you what, that Harrison Butker.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pick anybody over him. He has maybe the best kickoff leg in the league, and he's an excellent, excellent kicker. Excellent. And I like everything about him.
He's one of those guys that, because
I tell you what, he's been very fortunate to have Dustin around him.
Yes.
As a holder and also to kind of mentoring him along.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, because Justin Tucker's there and is the established guy, he's kind of playing second fiddle. But I'm with you. I think the Chiefs have such a weapon going into this game.
Yeah, we do.
It'll be fun.
We do. It's gonna. We're playing a good team. But we have a tremendous football team.
Are you handing out the trophy?
I don't think they will ask me to do that. I am going down as guest of the NFL because of the 100-year team.
Very good.
And Willie and Bobby and... And we knew about it since late October, and every time I talked to Will, they didn't want to ask him. So we weren't supposed to say anything for a long time, but we finally found out, and Buck and Tony Gonzalez. And so the NFL is bringing in all the 100 people.
That's awesome.
And including widows of Georgia Buchanan.
Yeah.
So when I found that out in the late October, I thought, wouldn't it be great if this year the Chiefs will make it? And
lo and behold.
And they're going to be there. And the way these people are approaching things, and the way they interview after game, the way they talk, they're there for one purpose. They're there to win the game.
Yes, yes, and we hope they do. We hope they do. Jan, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and enjoy your time down at the Super Bowl.
It is my pleasure, and I'm excited for the Mitch calls it and everybody else, the Chiefs Kingdom. It's a darn big deal.
You're going to see a lot of Kansas City fans down
Looking forward to it.
You're going to see a lot of Kansas City fans, there's no doubt. So as we go from, 14, 15-point underdogs to now one-point favorite. So let's get it done. Let's add another Super Bowl. I think it'll be impressive.
I think that will.
Jan, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. Jan Stenerud, Hall of Fame kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl IV. Scored the first 9 points of the game. And as he mentioned, a great, great football team filled with tons of Hall of Famers. Jan, one of them. But we'll see how many of the Kansas City Chiefs on this team end up going on to be a Hall of Fame. We know they've got an excellent kicker. They got an excellent quarterback. That's one thing that both teams had in common. We will take a break here in the program. We come back. We'll get some headlines. We'll play Stump the Chumps. It's coming up next here in the program.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Jan Stenerud's 48-yard field goal in Super Bowl IV was unequaled until this man tied it. Who was he? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.